Hi, this is Paul. I had a question come in on the video on masculinity, and I thought it was a really good question. I thought it'd be a good topic for a little video. Hey, Paul, I've been watching your channel since you first went on Jonathan Peugeot's channel back in the day. I feel like I've pretty much sampled everyone at this point. I want to write a comment to ask you, please elaborate on what I believe is the fundamental question that everyone in this little corner keeps dancing around, namely, what exactly is the future that we're supposed to be building towards anyway? Is this not the central question? Now, I take this to be not just what is the future of this little channel. This little corner isn't intended to be the be-all, end-all of everything. This little corner of the internet is just what it is right now, which is a group of people who are working on something together. Friendships have developed. We're trying to do some things. I think different people in this little corner have different agendas and different goals. John Vervaeke, for example, is working on a religion that's not a religion. Jonathan Peugeot and I are both Christians. Orthodox eschatology, maybe a little, I don't know if it's that much different from Protestant eschatology, actually. Protestants are so fragmented. When I listen to anticipation and participation in the life of the age to come and working towards that in this life, I doubt Jonathan Peugeot would say anything a lot different from that. Why does no one else give a detailed answer to this question? When your guest was referring to Western movies ending with a generative space at the end of the film, are we supposed to be generating in the first place? This is actually a very important question, and it's a very big question, and I think it's a question that a lot of people struggle with, because it's a question that very much ties in a religious framework the everything to the now, the always to the now, and for Christians, the life of the age to come to the life of the present age. And there's continuity and discontinuity in that. So with, for example, Dr. Jim, so I'm just going to play Dr. Jim here to let everybody know what we're talking about.
Recent, let's say, domination of a certain kind of storytelling. And I'm seeing that something in the tradition that I am very familiar with is missing. It's not really there. And now I'm going to try to describe that thing that I think is missing. I played in my mind a couple of ways of trying to introduce this. And I think perhaps the simplest way is the Western. I studied Westerns for a while, about 10 or 15 years ago, and High Noon is kind of a classically structured Western. It's a 50s Western by a guy named Howard Hawks. And it's a very simple story. There's a sheriff. He is getting married to the pure girl from the East who arrives in town. She's a school teacher. He's going to get married to her, and he's going to give up his sheriff job because he's cleaned up the town and everything's hunky-dory, and he's going to ride off into the sunset with his new bride.
By the way, the video I was just watching before I started this that I was really tempted to do something on, but the video's not yet done, and I'm probably going to have to watch it beforehand. Just pearly things. This is a channel that I haven't watched much of, but some people recommended it to me when I did a couple of videos on masculinity a little while ago. Can the institution of marriage be saved? Call-in show. And she opens up the video with, maybe I can grab it. She basically begins that the marriage contract is a bad deal for men, so she's clearly reaching out to the manosphere, and then she lays out some alternatives to marriage.
On one hand, from the women, I hear if a man loves you, then he'll marry you immediately, or he'll know right away. However, that doesn't really match up with what I'm seeing, because the average time it takes for someone to get engaged is 2 to 5 years. Okay. So Now, we've also talked about on this channel how prevalent single motherhood is. But on the other hand, we also see that marriage is a bad contract that men don't want to sign. So the problem is these conflict each other, right? If we don't get married, then we have single mothers and we have more baby mamas. However, I also see the case for men walking away from relationships and not wanting to get married because it is a bad contract for men that women are paid to leave. The average length of marriage is 7 to 8 years. So, and I'm pretty sure I've seen a couple things that say that they file about 2 years before. So it seems like the average length that they date before they're married actually is similar to when they actually get married. So on one hand, we say that's a bad contract, but we also say it doesn't count unless you have a ring. So this has me drawing the question of how do we move forward in the future? So I've written down a couple modern solutions for men and modern solutions for women that I've observed. This is not me telling you what to do. This is just what I've seen that people are doing today. So I want in the comment section and to call in and tell me what you see as the future moving forward. This is what I have come up with. And if I've missed anything, feel free to put that in too. So modern solutions for men. You live together, no legal marriage, but you have a ceremony with your friends and family, but you don't sign the government contract. You could do marriage with a prenup. No prenup, but date the girl for a certain amount of time and then get married. So in order to offset how risky marriage is, maybe you date her for a longer period of time. So that seems to be what men are doing now. They date the girl for like 2 to 5 years and then get married. You could be a bachelor forever, spin plates. I don't know a ton about domestic partnerships, but that seems to be an option too. And you could just have a long-term relationship and not live with her. Modern solutions for women. Demand marriage in the 1 to 2 years. Demand marriage from men within 1 to 2 years and cut ties if you don't get it. Date someone for 2 to 5 years in hopes that they will give you marriage. Live with someone with no marriage. Stay in a long-term relationship with no marriage. Sign a prenup and get married. So this is what I've come up with. Let me know. In the modern dating landscape, men, what do you want to do moving forward? And women as well, call in. You have the call-in link in the chat.
And right at the beginning of the movie, the guy he put in jail 7 or 8 years.
I realize that the last two times I've said something have been blank sound. I might have to do a little editing.
Years ago or so has been unjustly let out of jail and is coming to town. He's going to recreate the bad world that the sheriff had cleaned up. And in the midst of it, he's going to kill the sheriff. His goal is revenge against the sheriff. And the story plays out, in somewhat complicated ways that aren't important to the point I'm trying to make. But of course, the wedding is off. He's now the sheriff again, and no one wants to help him. But the story builds to the point where there's the showdown. Of course, it's at high noon. And there's complications between him and the woman along the way. But in the end, right near the end of the movie, mano a mano in the street, sheriff kills the villain and rides up the school teacher, his bride. He throws down the sheriff's star and they ride out of town. And that's the end of the movie. Now, that's the thing. The end of that is the thing that I think is missing and has kind of fallen off the map of storytelling recently. And
okay, so in some ways, storytelling has an eschatological crisis. Eschatology is the study of last things. And eschatology is sort of a haunted meaning crisis in and of itself, because it's like, okay, what has everything in the story been pushing towards, and where are we going?
I want to give that thing a little bit more flesh. It's what I want to call a generative arena. It's a circumstance in which the acting out of that world is building the future. It's possibility, and it's a kind of a stable place looking out into an open future. And of course it's symbolized by a man and a woman and the potential for them to have children. And so that image would change the U-shaped journey of the hero, because it would put the end to be not really an end or the circle that Campbell has, but rather a destination. There would be a real destination there, maybe a plateau that is reached. And that's the goal. That's the telos of that story, of that narrative.
Right. Now, when you get into Christian eschatology, and you get into the book of Revelation, the consummation, as I mentioned, with Grimgriz and Sevilla, if you haven't watched that video, the consummation is a marriage, and it's that generative moment similar to what Dr. Jim is talking about here. Now, we all, in some ways, want to prepare for generative moments, especially if you have an eschatology. There's a way in which human beings are always sort of leaning into the future. And if they're not leaning into their own future, they're leaning into the future of their children or their grandchildren or the future of the nation or something like that. Part of what's gone on, I think, at a very deep level, subconsciously, with the increasing rejection and walking away of Christian eschatology, that sort of sets up this meaning crisis by asking, what's it all for? Now, John Vervaeke tries to address that by talking about not meaning of life, but meaning in life. I'm not really convinced that that fully addresses it. Back to your question. I get that we follow God's laws, and that just feels like a precursor to the real work that we're supposed to be doing after all those laws. After all, most of those laws are restrictions, thou shalt not. So it's helpful to talk, if you're going to talk in that frame about God's laws, and especially if you say laws plural, to read all the way, well, not all the way, you can even just jump to the end of the book of Deuteronomy and read the covenant blessings and curses. Because there again, you sort of have a generative future, and that generative future is described many times in the Bible, in the Old Covenant, in the Old Testament, where she basically begins that the marriage contract is a bad deal for men, so she's clearly reaching out to the manosphere, and then she lays out some alternatives to marriage.
On one hand, from the women, I hear if a man loves you, that he'll marry you immediately, or he'll know right away. However, that doesn't really match up with what I'm seeing, because the average time it takes for someone to get engaged is 2 to 5 years. Okay. So now we've also talked about on this channel how prevalent single motherhood is. But on the other hand, we also see that marriage is a bad contract that men don't want to sign. So the problem is these conflict each other, right? If we don't get married, then we have single mothers and we have more baby mamas. However, I also see the case for men walking away from relationships and not wanting to get married, because it is a bad contract for men that women are paid to leave. The average length of marriage is 7 to 8 years. So And I'm pretty sure I've seen a couple things that say that they file about 2 years before. So it seems like the average length that they date before they're married actually is similar to when they actually get married. So on one hand, we say that's a bad contract, but we also say it doesn't count unless you have a ring. So this has me drawing the question of how do we move forward in the future? So I've written down a couple modern solutions for men and modern solutions for women that I've observed. This is not me telling you what to do. This is just what I've seen that people are doing today. So I want you guys. In the comment section and to call in and tell me what you see as the future moving forward. This is what I have come up with. And if I've missed anything, feel free to put that in too. So modern solutions for men. You live together, no legal marriage, but you have a ceremony with your friends and family, but you don't sign the government contract. You could do marriage with a prenup. No prenup, but date the girl for a certain amount of time and then get married. So in order to offset how risky marriage is, maybe you date her for a longer period of time. So that seems to be what men are doing now. They date the girl for like 2 to 5 years and then get married. You could be a bachelor forever, spin plates. I don't know a ton about domestic partnerships, but that seems to be an option too. And you could just have a long-term relationship and not live with her. Modern solutions for women. Demand marriage in the 1 to 2 years. Demand marriage from men within 1 to 2 years and cut ties if you don't get it. Date someone for 2 to 5 years in hopes that they will give you marriage. Live with someone with no marriage. Stay in a long-term relationship with no marriage. Sign a prenup and get married. So this is what I've come up with. Let me know. In the modern dating landscape, men, what do you want to do moving forward? And women as well, call in. You have the call-in link in the chat.
And right at the beginning of the movie, the guy he put in jail 7 or 8 years.
I realize that the last two times I've said something have been blank sound. I might have to do a little editing.
Years ago or so has been unjustly let out of jail and is coming to town. He's going to recreate the bad world that the sheriff had cleaned up. And in the midst of it, he's going to kill the sheriff. His goal is revenge against the sheriff. And the story plays out, in somewhat complicated ways that aren't important to the point I'm trying to make. But of course, the wedding is off. He's now the sheriff again. And no one wants to help him, but the story builds to the point where there's the showdown. Of course, it's at high noon. And there's complications between him and the woman along the way. But in the end, right near the end of the movie, mano a mano in the street, sheriff kills the villain and rides up the school teacher, his bride. He throws down the sheriff's star and they ride out of town. And that's the end of the movie. Now, that's the thing. The end of that is the thing that I think is missing and has kind of fallen off the map of storytelling recently.
Okay, so in some ways, storytelling has an eschatological crisis. Eschatology is the study of last things. And eschatology is sort of a haunted meaning crisis in and of itself, because it's like, okay, what has everything in the story been pushing towards and where are we going?
I want to give that thing a little bit more flesh. It's what I want to call a generative arena. It's a circumstance in which the acting out of that world is building the future. It's possibility, and it's a kind of a stable place looking out into an open future. And of course it's symbolized by a man and a woman and the potential for them to have children And so that image would change the U-shaped journey of the hero, because it would put the end to be not really an end or the circle that Campbell has, but rather a destination. There would be a real destination there, maybe a plateau that is reached. And that's the goal. That's the telos of that story, of that narrative.
Right. Now, when you get into Christian eschatology, and you get into the book of Revelation, the consummation, as I mentioned, with Grimgriz and Sevilla, if you haven't watched that video, the consummation is a marriage, and it's that generative moment similar to what Dr. Jim is talking about here. Now, we all, in some ways, want to prepare for generative moments, especially if you have an eschatology. There's a way in which human beings are always sort of leaning into the future. And if they're not leaning into their own future, they're leaning into the future of their children or their grandchildren or the future of the nation or something like that. Part of what's gone on, I think, at a very deep level, subconsciously, with the increasing rejection and walking away of Christian eschatology, that sort of sets up this meaning crisis by asking, what's it all for? Now, John Vervaeke tries to address that by talking about not meaning of life, but meaning in life. I'm not really convinced that fully addresses it. Back to your question. I get that we follow God's laws, and that just feels like a precursor to the real work that we're supposed to be doing after all those laws. After all, most of those laws are restrictions, thou shalt not. So it's helpful to talk, if you're going to talk in that frame about God's laws, and especially if you say laws plural, to read all the way, well, not all the way, you can even just jump to the end of the book of Deuteronomy and read the covenant blessings and curses. Because there again, you sort of have a generative future, and that generative future is described many times in the Bible, in the Old Covenant, in the Old Testament, where you find a variety of texts in the Old Testament where it talks about everybody getting to enjoy the field that they planted, not having raiders come in. Everybody, their children will all grow up. They'll get to see their children and their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren, and everyone will live long and nobody will die young. And all of this image is obviously set very much in terms of, well, our expectations of the calamities of life no longer coming in and destroying the settled happiness that we seek in this world. Some of what this little corner of the internet, I think, again, the heart of this little corner of the internet is to hopefully have conversations where we can all make progress towards this. I think there is a degree of frustration, even in the midst of religious groups, that even let's say within your own little segment of Christianity, let's say, that there's been a bottoming out of conversation, and that there's the sense that many of the things that are challenging us, as I said in the earlier part of that video where I had my little rant with Hezi, that pluralism, globalism, and technological disruption have become a common threat to all of the different religious traditions, both in terms of various faiths and also even within, let's say, the faiths, like within the different schools and traditions of Christianity. All of those things are challenging. And so it makes sense for us to compare notes more broadly. Now, in the process, I think the goal of this little corner is, in fact, to live, well, as a Christian, to be a better Christian, to be a more productive Christian. But I think, someone like Jacob would want to be a better Jew. Others will want to better pursue at least what they imagine will be their eschatological future, and especially for secularists who don't have much eschatology, you know, there might be the opportunity for some to find a religious tradition or find a pathway that will bring them more meaning and more of a future. So I spent some time looking into Orthodoxy, capital O, expecting them to have the answer to this question. But their attempts to answer seem as vague and half-hearted, although I will admit I haven't spent an enormous time researching Orthodox perspective. If this seems like an interesting and reasonable question to focus on, I hope that you do, if you haven't already. I feel like there's an enormous amount of young men ready and waiting to go build just as soon as someone points them in a direction of what it is exactly they're supposed to be building. And right there in the language is key. They're supposed to be building. There is a calling. There is a divine imperative. This, I think, is a big reason why Jordan caught the attention of so many young men. Because on one hand, I think in our culture, there's a sense that you see it in the zombie movies, you see it in the all sorts of apocalyptic catastrophe movies and stories, that the culture has painted itself into a corner. And this is where, again, Dr. Jim's idea of a generative future, of people building, there's nothing more challenging in some ways to do and hopeful to do than pursuing a future with marriage and children.
I'm going to start with James Bond.
Okay.
Because, you know, you look at a standard James Bond flick and it's got almost the exact structure, right?
Yep.
There's James Bond. He's in MI6. He's there flirting with what's her name. And he's a smart guy. He's a great fighter. He's, you know, all that. And, oh, the crisis. We've got a villain. And he charges out to fight the villain. You know, things, bad things happen. Obstacles. Alongside is this Bond girl. Oh, there she is. The Bond girl. She's there. She's with him. You know, he's not going to make it. He's trapped. He's, you know, the fates are against him, whatever. Oh, overcome the obstacles, destroy the villain. And there's he and the Bond girl in the love nest at the end of the film. And he's so involved in this, you know, in this relationship that he doesn't even take the congratulations from MI6, as they call, or whatever. You know, it's a classic ending, right? But James Bond is not a father, and the Bond girl is not a mother. These are not, that's not part of who they are. And I don't even, you know, someone might say, well, maybe they'll go off again. But no, it's the structure of the narrative, the structure of the character is that they are not that person, in fact. And so there is no generativity there. And what there is eternal recurrence. The only thing that can happen, and obviously did happen on a repeated basis, is that Bond shakes himself off after his tryst, and he goes back to MI6, and he flirts with the girl behind the desk, and a new villain pops up, and off we go again. And, you know, this is a kind of a flat world. The world has nothing really in it except a Bond character at a given age. You know, this is an ageless character, or a, you know, his, you know, he has no youth and he has no old age, although the guy who's playing him gets older as he goes on, but the character himself is frozen. This is a static,
right,
and essentially sterile world. And you can have the ecstatic individual effort, heroic, experiential, you know, kind of seeking out thrills and seeking out experience, that's not necessarily wrong intrinsically, as long as it's feeding, as long as it's got the right telos.
Right.
And in the end, that telos is the generative
Future.
Future.
And that generative future in terms of Christian eschatology is the consummation of the marriage between the church, which is the bride of Christ, and Christ. And the assumption is that these two are going to go into the future, into the next story, and bringing with them the fruit of what they have accomplished in this part of the story. Now, that obviously goes way beyond this little corner of the internet, but for a Christian, this is in many ways the story. And the Bible is very interesting in terms of how we participate in that story and in that world to come. It's evocative. There's certainly comfort. There's certainly meaning. There's certainly future. But that's what this is about. I think there's a directionality in the world that is, it's seeking, it's interesting that this word consummation is the, I mean, in eschatology, consummation is the second coming of Jesus Christ, which means that the story becomes enfleshed again in this world order. And of course, in Christianity, that's an echo from the first. And the virgin birth, for all people's skepticism about it, in the narrative structure, is again, it's a recreation in some ways. And the story folds out in this way. The fact that we've had in the Bridges of Meaning Discord, we've had two or more weddings, and now children coming through. I mean, in a strange way, those children are icons of that directionality towards consummation. And again, we use that in terms of a marriage. They consummated the marriage. We use that in terms of eschatology. That's the consummation where Jesus in his flesh once again inhabits this same objective material reality, to use Mark Lefebvre and Navigating Patterns phrase. And I think, you know, part of what I hear through you, Grizz, is a longing for consummation in that sense. I mean, in some ways, Thunder Bay was a consummation moment of this little corner, because we were all together in one space. It's not a final consummation, but it was a consummating moment. And there is, you see this in the LARPing of people who dress up like their favorite movie characters when they go to Star Wars or Rocky Horror Picture Show or Harry Potter or some big fandom that they long to inhabit. And I think it's that brain pulling together of flesh and spirit that, you know, that's the reality we're longing for. And I think this little corner is moving in that way, perhaps maybe not so self-consciously, but definitely moving towards that in I think a very Christological direction. So for a lot of different people, I'll speak about men first, that might mean marrying a woman. Now, there's 1 Corinthians 7 out there, and followed by 1 Corinthians 8 and 9, and I'm preaching on 9 this week. That might mean going on a mission, on a quest, because it doesn't always involve a marriage or a romance or having a family, that kind of generative future. Part of the difference that I've been learning in terms of Christianity and Judaism is that, for example, the Apostle Paul very much saw the opportunity of a generative future for single individuals as well. And you could see that in terms of vows of celibacy in the Roman Catholic tradition, because in a sense, the person is married to either dedicated to the bride of Christ as sort of a knight, or a woman is married to Christ in terms of a religious order. So there are various ways to go about it, but I think what we are all looking for is participation in the ultimate. And so even someone like John Vervaeke, with his meaning crisis and his ecology of practices, they are looking for participation in the ultimate. Jonathan Peugeot, I think all Christian traditions have the basic framework, even though language differs, of what the Orthodox call theosis. There's a lot of nuance in there. Protestants would probably much more quickly say something like union with Christ. And sort of in resistance to the fear coming from the world right now, in we seem to feel this desire for marriage, but dare we do it? A faith in God, a faith in the life of the age to come, a faith that sacrifices in this age will not be fruitless in the age to come. And what is required to build that? I mean, I can easily say those words, but having been in this space for 4 years, I fully understand that there are a good many people who may even want to believe in that and want to lean into that, but can't really find the space or the courage to do so. It doesn't feel convincing to them. You have to participate somehow. And I think what we have in this little corner are people coming in here looking for answers, looking to participate, looking for a community, looking for a project. People coming in with all kinds of different motivations. How long will they stay? Well, that probably depends on just how deep this thing is going to go. Joey said some things in this live stream. You might wonder, well, why? What all this attention to Jacob's channel? Well, Jacob has had a vision for when Jacob came up to Sacramento. He said, you know, he took me out to lunch after church on Sunday and bought me a nice steak and said, "This is what we're going to do." I said, "Oh, really?" "Yes, we're going to have TBN, Trinity Broadcast Network." And I laughed. That's where this joke is going to go in a minute. "We're going to have Trinity Broadcast Network, and we need to have a 24-hour channel that people can jump in on." And well, that hasn't actually pursued. My vision is much more of a network. You know, those of you who have been following the Estuary thing know that I far prefer distributed networks. I think they're far more robust. I think they afford far more diversity. They avoid the kinds of bottlenecks where you can get banned or exiled from a particular server or a particular community if you actually have a network of communities. But Joey, who of course came to my second meetup here in Sacramento, Joey, who was very instrumental in launching the Bridges of Meaning Discord server, was the sort of chief administrator for a while and then left it a little while ago. Joey's got tremendous insight, and you know, Joey isn't a believer. He's not a Christian, I'll say it that way, but this is how we ended the live stream.
Get platform Protestants, come on.
there are various things we could be doing, but getting a channel that's it won't have a backlog. I think that's the important part.
That's part of it. Then you're not creating more content forever. But yeah, I mean, we live in this postmodern era where people want to reject structures that have worked for a long time in industries like TV, and instead of recognizing, no, they just became corrupt. But the structure is correct, so you just want to replicate the structure, and everything will be fine. You want to replicate the structure with good people, because we got bad people.
Right? Structure is good, and you know, trying things is good, and especially in this environment where a lot of the things we do, they cost time, sure, and you don't want to lose, you don't want to just give away time needlessly for free. But also, as long as you're working on a project with at least one other person, then you're still building a relationship. You're attempting something. It's no less meaningful than working on a classic car with somebody or doing something like that. And, you know, like the more things we experiment with and the more things we try, and by we, I just mean everyone who I like, who I'm friends with, like I want all of my friends to try and do other things. And then if they've got other friends who I don't even like, those friends, those people should do things too. And maybe they'll do something great and prove me wrong. And then I'll say, sorry, you know, like, but that, I think that's kind of where we're at, is we've decided we're a group of people. We deserve to, you know, do our things, and we deserve to have hobbies and be able to talk to each other. I think that's the step, is we just keep existing. Like it's not, it doesn't have to be the final answer to every problem. It doesn't have to be the one structure that's gonna, like, I've been using the analogy in the comment sections. We don't have to build a Tower of Babel. Like that's completely unnecessary. We can build lots and lots of little churches and cathedrals and cottages and towns and everything else. And that's what the internet's for, in my opinion. It's untapped. It's free real estate. It's, you know, like do whatever you want, and we'll keep coordinating. We'll keep in touch, and occasionally we'll go to a wedding and have a couple drinks, and it'll be great.
Okay.
And that vision of, that's the I bit my tongue eating dinner last night, so I'm a little less nimble. That's the generative future, and it's not in conflict with the life of the age to come. It's in anticipation of the life of the age to come. It's done in faith that, in fact, what we commit ourselves to in this world will not be done in vain. And it sets up, in a way, the even greater things of the life of the age to come, even if you're someone like Joey and doesn't at this point possess a faith in the life of the age to come. I should end on the last minute here.
Okay, Prophet Zacharias, you are being tasked with making all kinds of memes of Paul Vanderclay as Paul Crouch, because he is going to be the leader of our new TBN. And you get the last word, and then I am ending this broadcast.
Okay, I'm going to say I'm out. Thanks for doing this. It's a great project, Jacob. Enjoying it.
Paul.
I'm just waiting. You know, this is the first step. You know, once I get my office really dialed in, then I start gold plating everything. And I want to be surrounded by women in their 60s and 70s wearing permanent makeup with lots of blue hair. And then I'll turn political. But which way?
Because I'm a pastor, I'll leave you with a verse. And I think the verse comes to, or the passage comes from the book of Jeremiah, and it's a word given by the Lord through Jeremiah to his people in one of their darkest possible moments, Jeremiah 29. These are the words of the letter that Jeremiah the prophet sent from Jerusalem to the surviving elders of the exiles, and to the priests, the prophets, and all the people whom Nebuchadnezzar had taken into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Now, it's very difficult for us to appreciate the devastation that the destruction of the temple meant for the people of Judah. The temple was the epicenter of the world for them. It was the, in a sense, the portal to the heavenly temple where the God of all creation reigned. It was Israel's connection to that God. It was their life, it was their future, it was their everything. And that temple now lay in ruins, and the best and the brightest, anybody worth anything, had been hauled up to Babylon to be assimilated in the great empire of Nebuchadnezzar. The letter was sent by the hand of Elessa, the son of Shaphan, and Gemariah, the son of Hilkiah, whom Zedekiah, king of Judah, sent to Babylon to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. And it said, well, the temple isn't quite destroyed yet, but it will be. Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, to all the exiles who I have sent into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon, build houses and live in them, plant gardens and eat their produce, take wives and have sons and daughters, take wives for your sons, and give your daughters in marriage, that they may bear sons and daughters. Multiply there and do not decrease. That's almost saying, give power to my enemies. Give power to the people who are destroying Judah and taking her riches and who will destroy Judah, and give power to the enemy? Why on earth should we do that? But seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile, and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will find your welfare. And this, I think, is one of the great secrets of the flourishing of the Jews throughout history, is that in many cases, this is exactly what the Jews have done. And they've also often not been rewarded for it. They've been rewarded for it with anti-Semitism and a lot of misery and persecution. For thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, do not let your prophets and your diviners who are among you deceive you, and do not listen to the dreams that they dream, for it is a lie that they are prophesying to you in my name. I did not send them, declares the Lord. For thus says the Lord, when 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will visit you, and I will fulfill to you my promise and bring you back to this place. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will hear you. You will seek me and find me. When you seek me with all your heart, I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and I will restore your fortunes and gather you from all the nations and all the places where I have driven you, declares the Lord, and I will bring you back to the place for which I sent you into exile. Now, Christians sort of take this and put another level on it, because the plan isn't that somehow I am not a physical exile, really. I do not necessarily want God to bring me back to New Jersey. Nothing against New Jersey, but that's if I wanted to move to New Jersey, I could. But in many ways, we sort of connect this with Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11 goes through the heroes of faith. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had an opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. And continues to go through there. Chapter 12. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Now again, I am a Christian, and so my participation in this little corner of the internet and what I am looking for in it is deeply connected with this. Obviously, not everyone in this little corner will give such an answer or have in mind an inheritance that cannot decay. But yet, together, we are talking across lines. We are sharing with each other. So we are facing common challenges that have been with us, really, in the modern era. And now, as modernity is receding, we face the common challenges that are today. And so, again, back to your question. What are you to build? Well, I would obviously recommend that you start going to church, because it's only in the practice of a faith that you can probably develop the kind of motivational imagination I forget the word that Verveke uses for that. The imaginal, that's his word for it. But you, in church, you can cultivate the imaginal to motivate you to make the kinds of sacrifices that seeking the welfare of the city, whether it's in being married and given in marriage and having children and grandchildren, or whether it's in a more Pauline way, a la 1 Corinthians 7, seeking the welfare of the city as a single individual. Marriage, again, in the Christian frame, is not essential. So to me, that's what this little corner is about. And it isn't a replacement for the church by any means, but it's a place where hopefully my work within the church can be improved. My knowledge of how to engage with those outside of the church can be improved. And as I compare notes with, say, someone like John Verveke or others within this corner who have no plans for attending church, that I can learn from them and they can learn from me. So that to me is where this is all going. Now, what you must do, I think, take the words of Jeremiah 27 seriously. Seek the welfare of the city that you're in. Marry and give in marriage. And work, you know, seek ye, again, in a Christian frame, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be given unto you. So to me, that's how I would answer your question. It's a great question. Thanks for asking it. And all the rest of you can leave a comment.